Hello, this is Brian Tatler from Diamond Head, and you're listening to the Blog of Rock.
Welcome to the Blog of Rock, the podcast about rock stars and their stories. My name is Uwe, and I'm gonna take you backstage and present to you the stories behind your legends. Of course, we're talking about the music that connects us all, but also about the people behind it. What inspired and motivated them? How did they create their brand? And what kind of rockstar tips do they have for you outside? Hi guys! Today's episode is all about a band that played a key role in the history of the origins of the 80s heavy metal scene. It's the band that probably influenced Metallica the most in the early garage days. Today we're talking about Diamond Head from Stourbridge, a town in the western British Midlands, the greater area of Birmingham. Birmingham? Yeah, exactly where also Black Sabbath, Judas Priest and also half of Led Zeppelin originally came from, but we'll get to that later again. It's the second largest city in England after London, which is best known for its metalworking. How fitting for today's topic. It happened precisely in this area 40 years ago that my today's talk guest Brian Tatler wrote guitar riffs for The Eternity when he was still a teenager. Their debut album, Lightning to the Nations, has just been re-recorded and re-released with the current lineup on the occasion of its 40th birthday. In itself, it doesn't sound that spectacular, especially since various re-releases of the original album are already on the market. But what Brian Tatler and his brilliant current singer Rasmus Bohm Andersen, who also produced the album at the same time, did with the legendary riffs knocked me out of my boots. The new version of Lightning to the Nations 2020 is pure energy. All 7 songs, including Am I Evil, plus 4 sensational cover versions as a tribute. I wanted to know more about this and caught a very relaxed Brian Tatler on a Zoom call. Unfortunately, the connection wasn't perfect, but I wish you a wonderful travel back to the 80s.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing yourself? Yeah, you're at home or studio?
Now I'm at home. Just in a little spare room where, you know what it's like. I can see you've got a nice selection of Diamond Head albums.
That's right. I'm old enough to get them, the original recordings, from the beginning.
Wow, yeah.
Mid-September, you shocked the metal world in a very positively way when you announced there will be a 40th anniversary of Lightning to the Nation. Who came up with this idea?
Our drummer Carl came up with that idea. We knew anniversary was coming up in 2020. So we just thought, what do to celebrate the 40th anniversary? Carl suggested we could re-record Lightning to the Nations with this lineup, with modern technology, make it more full, a bit more heavier. I'm really, really glad we did. And normally a band will do shows, where they play the album or something like that. And we did all that in 2010, where we did our third history, but this time we've kind of done something a bit special. We had the opportunity, and Raz is a producer and offered to be the producer on this record. So we just let's make a start, and then it was a case of getting in rehearsal to work out the covers, because there's 4 covers on the end of the album, which was kind of my idea. And so we had to rehearse those, which we did December and January last year. Well, and this year.
So it was all planned. So it was not just a state of boredom where you stayed home and couldn't really celebrate. So it was all planned before the quarantine.
Yeah, we did the drums in February at Carl's, who lives in France. Then Braz had edited the drums, and I went down and recorded guitar, and then Raz did the vocals at home and mixed the album at home.
It sounds terrific. And I was really more surprised you're coming up with this now, because last year you've released a great album, The Coffin Train, which was so well received. And I read in so many reviews about this album that it's the best Diamond Head album after Lightning to the Nation.
That's amazing. I didn't expect that. I mean, you know, when you make a new record, you just hope people will like it. But to compare it to the original album, everybody obviously has grown over the years, is amazing. And it gives the band lots of confidence to do more, to keep going, you know.
Usually when a band does a re-recording of a classic album, it's hardly stands the test of time. But I think you've added another rock to your all big milestones, because, you know, if the basic songs are the same, but there's an unbelievable production by Raz, which makes the sound even more heavier. And especially now, finally, we hear the songs in a production which maybe the original production should have deserved.
Awesome if we'd have had a good producer back in the day. But it was just done in a local studio. We didn't have a producer. It was just done by the house engineer, a chap called Paul Robbins, who worked at the studio, and we were given a week's studio time, so we had to record and mix the whole album in that time. And then, of course, it sounded great to us because we were only like 19, 20 years old, but we couldn't get a record deal with it. But no label would sign the band, or at least, you know, we were offered some little deals, but nothing that the management were interested in. And so, I mean, that's a whole other story. That's a complicated story. But the modern sound that you can get now with, you know, production and digital recording and, you know, high amplifiers and things like that makes such a difference. People, you know, metal has moved on so much in 40 years that it was a fascinating idea and opportunity to try and bring these songs into the 21st century.
And you really succeed with this attempt, especially because you got a new singer, Raz, which is with you for a couple of years right now, who's got such a strong voice and also a strong personality on stage. I've seen it already. And he's such a powerful singer, which really gives Diamond Head a new breath. I know you started this band over and over again, then stopped, then restarted. But I think this time you really have a stable lineup, especially because you have this great frontman who's also a great producer.
Absolutely. He's made a big difference to the band. He joined in 2014. I feel, you know, Diamond Head's been moving in the right direction. He is very good singer, very powerful singer, works great live. And nothing phases him, really, in that respect. He can reach high notes. And so, you know, with the covers, we were able to do, you know, vocally quite difficult covers. And it didn't really phase Raz in that respect. So, he's a treasure, I think, for this band. He fits in perfectly. And it's great.
So let's talk about these covers. You know, the original album had only 7 songs on some of them. They're very, very long. And I remember back in the days when the vinyl only had 20 minutes per side. But this time you've chosen to add these bonus tracks. What was the concept behind these? You've chosen them?
I chose them. All along, I said we should do some covers. You know, once we decided, okay, let's do the album, rather than just do the album, because on the reissue album, the CD version that came out 2001 and 2011, there was all the B-sides. There were things like Streets of Gold and Play It Loud, etc. So, of course, I re-recorded that again. We just wanted to do the album. But I thought as an extra, extra tracks or whatever, let's do some covers because we haven't done any covers for a long time. It'd be good fun. And at the front of my mind, I kept thinking we should do a Metallica song, really. You know, they've covered Diamond Head. Be a perfect circle to kind of, you know, homage. It just seemed to work, you know. And then once we discussed it with everybody, it was a sort of no-brainer idea. Yeah, we should do a Metallica song. Diamond Head, Metallica just seemed like a good idea. So, and then it's a case of choosing the songs. I had the task of choosing the songs for this band.
Which is difficult, but you've chosen the perfect one, Romeo, especially when you listen to the new version of No Remorse. It really sounds like a Diamond Head track. This is really crazy.
I think when I listened to it again, I just thought, yeah, there is Diamond Head qualities at that. The way they play the riffs, etc. The fact that there's a big solo right part is reminding me of the Prince. And these little bits that remind me of Dead Reckoning and Sucking My Love and things like that. So I think, you know, the Diamond Head's influence on Metallica is perhaps strongest on Kill 'Em All. And there's quite a few little Diamond Head things going on in No Remorse that I picked out on. So, of course, when we went to rehearse it, it sounded great in rehearsal room. It fitted like a glove.
So has there been any reaction by Lars from your, let's say, friendly revenge?
I got to talk to him. We did a Zoom chat a while back. First of all, I sent him the file of the song, and he replied that, you know, what an honour, he said, which was lovely. And it was very flattering. He thought it sounded great. And he's very to the fact that they've got a Dane in the band.
Of course, yeah, that's right.
Dane in Rasmus. Yeah, and so we wanted to know where this is from. How did he come to join the band and things like that. Anyway, he said, why did you pick this one? And I had to explain that there's something that just worked for me and reminded me of Diamond Head about it. So I think he probably completely agreed that there's a little bit of Diamond Head in there.
On the other cover versions on the album, you picked people from your area. So the next cover version goes to Judas Priest, which are also from the Birmingham area. So why did you choose Sinner as a track? Yeah.
Okay, we went through a couple of songs. We'll do Under Domination of Bad Wings, which is, my favourite Priest album. We tried a couple of others, and then we had a discussion, and Raz started to get more and more into Sinner. It's a track that I often in soundcheck things. And I've been a fan since that album came out in 75. But Raz said it would be a bigger statement for the Priest fans to do Sinner than a really obscure like or Considered Tired and Running Wild. And so I think I agreed with Raz that, I mean, it's such a brilliant song. I thought it was going to be a bit tricky because it's quite long and it's quite complicated. It's got Simon Phillips on drums, hasn't it? And but I thought if Raz can sing it, then we should do it. So we all learned it. Great. What a great track. I love it.
So do I. And the funny thing is that, especially you're talking, it's a long track with lots of breaks, tempi change and so on. It's you know, overall also like a diamond track from the beginning, because you did this also with some of your tracks in the beginning as well.
That's what I thought. It's one of the touchdown tracks. I think that James and Sina are two very important songs for Diamond Head. Sad Rings, the whole album was a huge album for Diamond Head, just as Machine Head was an important album and Master of Reality. But Sad Wings, I saw Priest in, I think, 73, when they opened for Budgie at like Birmingham Town Hall or something like that. And it was about 70p to get in. Priest was born and I thought then, and I kind of followed them from then. And saw them a few times over the years and bought albums. And one of our local heroes, you know, I'd go and see him at Birmingham Odeon. I remember watching him open with Exciter, and it was fantastic.
Great. Another Birmingham guy from your area, you sing on the next track, which is The Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin. I know you're coming from the same area as Robert Plant did.
Yes, and John Bonham. Bonham was Bromgrove, and I think Plant was West Bromwich or something like that. And again, huge fan of Zeppelin. They're my favourite band. I only got to see them once in 1979 at Nebworth, but I've got all the albums. Yeah, I see Robert Plant. He lives not far from where I live, and I have even seen him in the local pub, sometimes where I drink. So fabulous that he still stayed around here. Even with all that success, he could go and live anywhere in the world, and he chose to stay and live around the Midlands and the Black Country, and it just keeps him grounded, you know, keeps his feet on the ground. But so I have always loved Immigrant Song. People like, I don't know where they got the idea from, and I've never heard anything quite like it since. But the opportunity to cover it with Raz are just too good to miss. I just thought, you know, again, if Raz can sing it, we've got to do it.
I've heard the story that you've met Robert in 1980 in a garden center where he signed your record, your Led Zeppelin record.
That's right. Yeah, that is absolutely true. I found the records out the other day, and I thought I'll put a photo online of the autographs, you know, that he signed these things for me. And he wrote inside. We must have told him. Three of us went, myself, Sean and Colin, went to this garden centre. And we must have said, we're a band, you know. And he wrote in the sleeve, he wrote, good luck with the band, you know, Robert Plant.
<That's>
fabulous.
Great.
And I've kept these albums for 40 years. And there you go.
That's crazy. But, you know, before you told me that you've seen Led Zeppelin at Nebworth, this must be a great experience for you.
Oh, yes. I'd always wanted to see Zeppelin since probably about 74, 75. Never got the opportunity. They did at Earl's Court. I think they did Five Nights at Earl's Court, but I did get a ticket. And so when they announced Nebworth, I got a ticket for that. And it was a really weird bill, wasn't it? I don't know if you've ever seen a poster, but there was Chaz and Dave on and Fairport Convention and Commander Cody and his Lost Planet. There was all sorts of like weird you know, bands on before Led Zeppelin. I was only interested in Led Zeppelin. I pretty much snoozed my way through the day waiting for Zeppelin, who probably came on about like 7:30 at night or something.
That's crazy. And the last version on the album is Red Bad Blue by Deep Purple. And I really must say that I was surprised to hear this as a choice, because I would have expected the Black Sabbath track at the end.
Yes, well, the truth is we tried Sabbath and it didn't quite fit. We went through a few songs and we couldn't make the sound somehow. It just didn't suit us as players and maybe Raz as a singer. I think Sabbath's sound is so unique that it didn't gel. It was weird, really. We were all kind of perplexed as to how come it don't really work now. Whereas No Remorse had just fell into place. The Sabbath songs we tried didn't. And I mean, I'd have had to go back to the drawing board, I think, and work out exactly how you do the guitar parts, the bass parts, the drum parts. But it didn't quite work anyway as we moved on. We didn't spend, you know, tons and tons of time on it.
But Red Bad Blue is a good choice as well, because this is not one of the obvious Deep Purple tracks, of course, but it's a classic. And I never recall that I heard any other version of this track before.
I couldn't find a cover. I looked online. And I liked it. I really liked that album, Who Do You Think We Are? And I remember listening to it when I was a teenager, and I really liked this track. I'm a huge Blackmore fan. This album had Woman from Tokyo as the lead track, but so I didn't want to do a track that heavily featured John Law, because he had a keyboard there in the band. And I wanted to do something that was very guitar riffy, and this just fitted the bill. And also show a bit of an album cut, a deep cut, rather than, you know, Highway Star or
of course,
Child in Time. You know, I didn't want to do one of the big songs.
While covering a track which is featuring Ian Gillan as the original song, did you remember that you played with Ian on the Born Again tour?
Well, every now and again I get reminded of that tour. That's right. And that's when they had the Stonehenge. That was my first tour of Europe. An amazing experience. It was Gillan on vocals. It was quite strange, really, to see Ian Gillan and Bevan on drums alongside Tony and Visa. But then for an encore, they would do Smoke on the Water. And that was really strange as well. Tony playing Smoke on the Water and then Ian Gillan singing Paranoid. It was, quite weird.
I can imagine. You were quite young at that time, and I always recall you were teenagers when you wrote the original songs for Lightning to the Nations, and the original album was released a few months after your 20th birthday.
I was born in April, so the album came out. Yeah, I'd be 19 or going 20. Very young. It was only our second time in the studio, and we were left to get on with it and record songs as we'd been playing them live. We hadn't done a lot of gigs by that point, but we had been going 4 years. And so we'd written songs. And I think that would helped the album immensely, is the amount of material we'd written and discarded, really, as we've kept improving. So, you know, we had a lot of songs to pick from for that debut album, but we didn't have a lot of experience, you know, with produce a click track, for example. We had to abandon that idea, and of course, nothing's done digitally, so you can't fix anything. You just have to play it live on day, and we would just overdub a guitar and a vocal.
But it's what came out was a classic. But I'm sure at that time you couldn't live from the music. You were still a mechanic at that time, weren't you?
Yes, I think I was. I left in 1980, once Diamond Head got busier, because we started doing a lot of more gigs in 1980. In 79, we probably only did about 15 gigs or something. And I think we did about 80. So I'd been going to the boss and saying, I need to have a week off, you know, because I'm in a band, etc. And he kind of let me have a bit of time off here and there. But it was always, you know, you've only got a certain amount of weeks holiday that you can take. And then come 1980, we probably had a 3-week tour booked or something. And I had to say, I'm gonna leave, you know, because I'm going to sort of throw me lot in with the band full time, you know, go full time. And so did Colin and Duncan. Colin worked in a shop selling men's clothes, like a gentleman's outfitters, you know, where they have to measure the inside leg and all that. Suits you, sir. And Duncan worked as a cut glass engraver at Webb Corbett in Stourbridge. So we all packed in our jobs. Sean didn't have a job, but he'd been going to college, sort of. And we just went for it, you know. We thought, now or never, this, you know, the big time beckons.
But surely you needed to wait a long time until you, you know, finally remade it financially, when at least Metallica put some of your songs on their albums, and you somehow, Metallica saved your pension with the recording of Am I Evil.
We got a record deal, but we were only signed for 2 years. We got to make two albums. And then the band fell apart in 1985. Then I ran a studio for a bit and all sorts. Diamond had reformed, did another album, etc. But yeah, I think thanks to Metallica covering, as they got bigger and royalties started coming in, that it has been a complete lifesaver for myself and Sean. It's given me so much freedom to do what I want, to not have to do a 9-to-5, and to be able to pursue Diamond Head and work on Diamond Head. So since 2000, Diamond Head's been going, and we're just building all the time.
Great stories from the past. Another issue I want to talk with you about, because, you know, you've been considered as a riff lord who has inspired a lot of guitarists after, especially when it came to the much heavier sound. And as I told you, I'm coming from an area in Germany, the Ruhr area, which is quite similar to the British Midlands, lots of industrial regions. And there were a lot of bands coming from this area, like Creator and Sodom, who somehow got also influence from the new wave of British heavy metal, and especially, you know, from the darker side of it. Did you feel that you also inspired the German musicians in a way?
I mean, it's flattering to think that, but I didn't really. No. I mean, it's obvious we inspired Metallica because they covered the songs, but otherwise, I don't know who we influenced. You know, I do hear from time to time, yeah, I was a big fan or etc. I spoke to the guys in Cradle of Filth a couple of years back, and they said, you know, we're big fans, and etc. It's lovely to hear, but it's not so apparent in music because it moved so far forward. It got so much faster and darker, and the vocals, you know, became less melodic. That it's not obvious. It's not always apparent to me that they may have been listening to Diamond Head.
did you follow the German bands at that time?
I didn't really. No. Obviously, you can't escape. But now the more underground bands. I don't really listen to a lot of modern metal because I just think I'm more influenced by earlier stuff. And I just try and find my own music as I practice the guitar. I try and practice every day. It's not like I'm listening to what the latest thing is and trying to keep up with whatever's new. I try and write in a Diamond Head style, really. I try and write things that I think sound Diamond Head, and I reject lots of stuff that doesn't, you know. Every now and again, you come up with it and you think, oh, it's a bit icy, you know, or it's a bit, you know, it's a bit Black Sabbath. So you try, I better leave that. Because I think each one's got its own territory. And if you stray onto their territory, it was the point in a way. You need to have your identity.
So you've got plenty of riffs ready for the next new album?
Yes. I was just doing one an hour ago. I've been working on a track here. But yeah, I mean, I've had since March. We've had no gigs whatsoever since March. And we've got nothing in Ireland until April. So I just took the opportunity to get creative and make the next, you know, or at least start writing the next album. And great. Awesome. Great ideas.
We're looking forward. So the next plan, what I see on your calendar, is the tour with Rock Goddess in April. How realistic will it be?
Well, hopefully, you know, we'd talk of vaccines and things like that. There's tons of bands already got dates booked for 2021. Hopefully it will sort things out. I've said it before, but we've got to do something, haven't we? We can't just be in lockdown, pubs, entertainment industry open. It's just ruining the music industry, and it's thousands and thousands of people's lives, and we're becoming unemployed, and you know, mental health issues. It's a real, real shock to the, I think, this lockdown. We're still in our second lockdown.
Last question would be, did you use the pandemic somehow to discover also a new side of yourself? Did you manage to have a new hobby or something like this?
I haven't had a new hobby. I try and keep fit better, you know, because I had a health problem 5 years ago. So I cycle. I used to go swimming, but of course they closed all the baths, the swimming pools. So all I can do is walk and cycle and you know, try and go outdoors. I read and I watch a lot of films. I reckon I watch probably 100 films a year. So I've been trying to, you know, keep myself entertained with the guitar and music and then reading and watching films and things like that. I don't necessarily watch a lot of normal TV, you know, soap operas and quiz shows, but I do like a good film. I just started watching Star Is Born last night, because I hadn't seen it, and I'm about halfway through that. That's good.
So I hope you don't get bored too much within the next month, and hopefully stay healthy until we're going to meet, hopefully again next year, when you're also coming over to Europe after a hopefully successful tour with Rock Goddess. What a nice package, by the way. Thank you very much for taking the time. And of course, keep in touch. All the best to the new release. I think it will be a big surprise for all the people hearing the old tracks in the new style.
Thank you very much. It's going very well at the moment. I've just heard it's in the national charts over here. So I've had a lot of pre-orders and it's gone in the charts. So it's looking very good. And I look forward to seeing you next year and see all the Diamond Head fans again, because it's horrible to be, you know, out of action for 12 months. And
I really appreciate you taking the time, and stay healthy. Have a nice Christmas and good luck with the album. It's big one, big one.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you
have
very
a good
much.
Christmas.
Stay healthy. Bye bye, Brian. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow my stories about rock stars at the podcast dealer of your trust so that you don't miss the next episode. You can get it as a free subscription from Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Deezer, SoundCloud, YouTube, and the podcast portal from Google. You can also listen to the stories that have been already published there, because there's new food in every week. And above all, tell your friends and share the good news on social media. Follow me also on Facebook and Instagram. You can find me under the Block of Rock, and there you get more photos and videos about these episodes. All right, then let's hear again next time. Until then, keep on rocking.